Welcome to the Red Pill. I'm Joe. I'm here with Mike. Tonight, we are going to continue talking about terms and concepts of the Red Pill community and how they apply to you. So without any further ado, we're going to do a quick recap on what we've covered thus far. So going back to the beginning of class, go ahead and bring this up really quick. We did our introductions. We went over the keep it simple, stupid methodology, desires and goals. Right now, we are here, middle of this. Is there anything you wanted to recap in particular?
No, I think it all goes back to kind of the thesis of, you know, this is building personal power. This is connecting with other men. But, you know, it self-actualization is a big part of this. And what I think, you know, what's tough is we're trying to get through a lot of things that people need to understand and become aware of. But to really internalize it and put that into your process, you know, you're not going to remember a lot of this stuff day to day, and that's fine. I think what's important to contextualize for people is not necessarily just recapping, but setting level setting and you know, helping them understand that this is not meant to be super difficult. Like, you know, you don't have to remember, you know, what is Brifolt's law. There's not going to be a test at the end of this, but the real test is like, does this get you a step closer to what you want? Yeah, it's, are you applying this stuff? And so if you can get a couple takeaways from each episode, I mean, that's, you know, you coming back and referencing all this stuff and going, oh, that makes sense. That's why this situation didn't make sense originally.
Right. And that, I want to touch on that as well. So like last week we titled it Brifolt's Law, and I forget what the other part was. We did a deep dive on a lot of topics. Those are just two of the more prominent ones that people may have heard of. But definitely go watch these in sequence because we're covering a lot of detail. Also, not just the two items talked about. Tonight's episode is titled, I believe, Feminine Imperative and Hypergamy. We're going to talk about a lot more than just those two subjects. And just kind of talk about where we're at right now in the red pill portion of this course. We are in the terms and theory. All right, so we still have a long way to go just in the red pill before we even get into the later sections of the course.
Yeah, these really are key concepts.
Yep. See, where did we left off last week with Dark Triad. And I'm not going to go back into that in detail. We're just going to kind of continue on, starting with the feminine imperative. So this is just, it's a term that we use to describe the way society is shaped in such a way to protect women. I was watching Tim Pool earlier from a video he did, I think a month or so ago, and he makes a really good point. And I don't think he's the one that came up with this original term. But so women are born rich and die poor, men kind of the opposite if they put in the work. Men generally become more social, their clout goes up, their social alliances build as they get older. Women, what makes them rich, so to speak, is their youth and fertility, which informs, it's based on, their looks are informed by their hallmarks of fertility. So as those hallmarks of fertility go away with time because of age, women's sexual market value, for lack of a better term, goes down with time. That's when they hit the wall. So this whole paradigm flip-flops. And the point of this is that women who are as looks privileged, who have had the world handed to them on, you know, on a silver platter, the world is their oyster when they're in their teens and 20s and early 30s. Those that have been privileged in such a way, when things become, those who are privileged, to those who are privileged, when life becomes equal, it feels like oppression. Does that make sense?
It does.
So, and there's a really good Thomas Sowell quote that kind of tracks to this. I just can't remember it off the top of my head. But yeah, those that have been benefiting from advantages, as soon as those advantages are taken away, it feels like they're at a disadvantage. When reality is, they're just more on an equal footing with everybody else. That's kind of the 30s for women. So when guys feel like, wow, man, I've never had it better in my 30s, 40s, sometimes 50s. Whereas women, it's like, holy shit, what do we do? They're scrambling. You get a lot of negativity that kind of comes out of this in the political landscape with a lot of feminists. A really good example of this was, what was that feminist's name? Jessica Valenti. There's a meme out there about this where she was bemoaning. What's that?
It rings a bell, yeah.
So, and you've probably seen this floating around where in the one picture, she's bemoaning, catcalling how guys whistle at her on the street. And then it's juxtaposed with the one from like a year later where she hit the wall and now guys aren't giving her attention anymore. She's like, God damn it, I miss this. I hate that I miss this. So it just kind of goes to show how this feminine imperative kind of comes back around. So
I think what's important to touch on here is not only is it what you've described, really, and not to get too much into like the culture war and feminism versus, you know, the red pill and the manosphere and all that stuff. But I think one really important thing to understand is that most of popular culture today has adopted these ideas, whether they recognize it outright or not. Things like, you know, it's not okay to hold women accountable. Like it's not their fault, right? It's believe all women. It's not blame all women. And I think those ideas of, you know, what women regard amongst themselves as, you know, the touchstones of really advantages of being a woman, they now have over the past, you know, call it 50, 60 years, have gotten a lot of guys, a lot of men to subscribe to this idea of, you know, let's put women up on a pedestal, right? Let's not hold them accountable. Let's not really look into any double standards. And that overall is the imperative of just advancing those feminine interests. And so yep. Really it goes back to the strategy piece.
And it does. So looping it back around to how does this apply to guys? Mm-hmm. Right there. The greatest threat to the feminine imperative is men becoming self-aware of their own SMV and information like this show and the manosphere in general. We're taking women off the pedestal. We're treating them like equals for a change. And that, to those who have been privileged in a sense, is a huge threat. And this is where you see a lot of the negativity that comes out of that. So for those that think that we're anti-women, we're not. We're all about taking women off the pedestal, treating them like equals, and recognizing truths about women and men's, the differences. For like, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, totally. This is not all about hating on women. It's about recognizing that we have a choice, right? We have a choice. We don't have to necessarily say, oh, I'm not going to hold them or I'm going to, you know, just wave away any criticism or accountability that I would have for, you know, a woman. Yep. And at its core, you know, if you're saying feminism is equality, well, I would hold my peers accountable.
So, and unfortunately, we don't do this in society, especially when it comes to women in a lot of cases. The videos that I've got linked down below. So unfortunately, I can't play them here, but I can show I have them in the description for the viewers. One is by Larry Summers or by Tom Lake is talking about Larry Summers when he got fired from Harvard by saying men and women aren't the same. Why is that a controversial statement? But anyway, I don't want to thread jack too much here. What was it you were saying?
No. You're on it. You're right on it. It's just the philosophical part of, you know, if women want to be equal, then being equal means being subject to criticism, scrutiny, and really, to a degree, the same type of commoditization that men have been subject to for a long time.
Unfortunately, that will probably never happen, at least in our lifetimes. Yeah. So you hear a lot about talk about the glass ceiling. And this is where women are trying to become equal in politics, executive jobs. It's always the good stuff. You never hear about the glass cellar, which is where men make up 75% of the homeless, majority of your suicides, majority of your on-the-job deaths, 98% of your war deaths. The things that make men excel in academia, politics, business are the same things that make men failures as well. There are wildly more amounts of men on both ends of the spectrums for good and for bad. So until women are willing to take those same kinds of risks that men make that allow them to be successful or failures, you're not going to have women at equal proportions on either sides. It's all about the risk. And society kind of coddles women in a sense where it's okay to go ahead and we got to get more women into STEM. We got to get more women into this. We got to get more women into that. You never hear calls to get more women into being sewage people.
That's really what this comes down to.
And trash collectors, stuff like that.
Totally. To put the period in the end of the sentence here for this slide, because I don't want to spend all day on it, but there are higher expectations of men than there are of women.
Yes. Period. That's a fair statement. we're going to get into this more in depth later on in the course, but where women are, where demands are placed on women, it's usually by other women. And more often than not, it's usually in a sexual frame. And there's reasons for that. We'll get into that later in the course. So moving on. It's not clicking. There we go. The friend zone. This is an interesting term, and this is a really controversial thing for some reason. A lot of people will deny that the friend zone even exists. Well, it does, and for two reasons. One, like we just talked about, I got it right here on the it's on this screen. Women will knock a guy away from being a sexual option in a lot of cases, where if they're just not interested in the guy, that's fine. I like you as a friend, blah, blah, blah. I think of you as a brother. You've heard all the platitudes. Mm-hmm. And 9 times out of 10, it is what it is. The women aren't interested in you sexually. You got rejected. Move on. Where guys find themselves in the friend zone, it's because the woman rejected them, and the guys continue to play at being nice to try and pretend to be their friends, waiting for it to just be their turn. Sometimes it pays off. Most times it doesn't. And what these guys end up doing is they find themselves in an orbiter frame. They're circling around the women in their periphery, sniffing around, waiting for their chance to pounce. And the women will just collect all these guys in their lives over time. Some guys fall out, new guys come in. This is the women's version of plate spinning.
Yep.
With orbiters, just so we're clear on that.
That's so key. Let me touch on that for a second. This is the women's version of plate spinning. And the reason why that is the case is because validation is sex for women. It's equivalent to what men look at as sex. And so when a young guy can have, you know, 3-4 women that he's dating or sleeping with, or, you know, what have you, plating, right, is what we're calling it. A woman will have, I imagine that they wouldn't really consider themselves as having a friend zone, where it's this binary, either I don't see you as this or I do see you as that. I think that they are completely comfortable keeping a stable of people around just for the validation. Like, why do I need the sex from you? I'm getting the validation, right? And guys see it almost in the other way of like, why would I marry you? I'm already getting the sex.
Right. Well, to kind of drive into this a bit more too, it's not just us making this stuff up, guys. There's a lot of research on this. Lou Ambrosidine wrote a good book called The Female Brain. Now, so I've talked about this before, where guys, when they see really physically attractive women, it does the same thing to their brain that alcohol does. It makes us dumb, makes us stupid. We make a lot of bad decisions. So when we think we're thinking with our dick, it's because of this change in our brains. The same thing happens with women. I don't know if it was Brizendine or not, but there was MRIs done on women's brains when they read these like chicklet, these novels, what do they call them? Romance novels. The same parts of the brain activate in women reading romance novels that men in men's brains lights up when they watch porn. Romance novels are porn for women's brains, if you think of it in that sense. So there's a lot of physical differences involved. And to kind of, there was a corollary to this, the same thing with validation triggers the same kind of sense of well-being in women that like long-term monogamous relationships used to get for guys. Just the act of getting validation. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to be very, very reserved with the attention and validation that you give women. It has to be earned and it has to be reciprocal. If you're not doing this, you're in the damn friend zone. And at best, you're an orbiter. So make sure that you're being reserved and in control of the intention that you give women and that you're doing it for the right reasons, that you're getting a reciprocal amount of validation and attention back. Otherwise, you're an orbiter and you're not going to get your needs met in that kind of a relationship.
It goes back to what you said last week of make sure you get yours first, because if we go back and watch the last week's stream about Brefault's law, but if you adhere to that, what does that look like in practice, right? That means like, if there's a girl that is, you've been spending a lot of time around and you're kind of in this space of, you know, you're becoming friendly and whatnot, it's not getting romantic, you're not shooting your shot, but you're going to, oh, let me take you out to lunch, let me do this, let me do that. You are not sending the right message, and women communicate covertly, right? So if she's providing value to you as a person, right? I'm not talking about romantically. I'm just saying if she's taking going out of her way to provide you value and you want to reward that, that's fine. That's the right message. But make sure you are at least cognizant of the message you're sending here.
It's got to be reciprocal. That's the main thing. Because people, when they invest in each other, they value the relationship, whether it's romantic or not. If it's all one-sided, you are going to find yourself walking on eggshells. You're going to be getting taken advantage of either for physical labor. Maybe you're going to help her move, or maybe you're taking her on going out to dinner, stuff like that. She's getting a monetary reward or benefit that is not being reciprocated. Don't allow yourself to get used. Be mindful of Brifolt's law and don't allow yourself to become an orbiter where it's a lopsided, one-sided relationship.
I feel like that's not controversial. Unidirectional relationships don't work.
Exactly. There's nothing really more to be said about that,
In
my opinion. Another one is Kino. It's a dumb pickup term, but it's a real actual thing, and it's called haptics, which is just nonverbal communications through touch. But it's important to know, like, what is Kino escalation? It's where you, through natural course of interacting with women, or men if you're gay, that you physically escalate the intimacy of that physical nonverbal communication. Mm-hmm. Might start with just a pat on the shoulder, touch with the back of your hand on their arm to get their attention. Eventually, it kind of escalates over time as things progress, all the way up to having a sexual relationship. There's this normal, progressive kind of thing. And then the POA world, it was the guy's name, Vin DiCarlo, had the Kino escalation ladder. And to this day, it's still one of the best guides you can probably find on this subject out there to this, bar none.
Some examples of that would be like if a woman shares a drink with you, she will make out with you. Like that's a general law that's been
proven. And by share a drink, we mean drinking from the same cup?
Drinking from the same glass. Yeah. Exactly. If she drinks out of your glass, she's going to make out with you, period. Things like that. There are certain takeaways from the ladder.
I've never heard of that one. That's an interesting concept. Where did that come from?
That was if you read through the ladder in detail.
I don't remember that being in there, but I'll take your word for it.
I think he throws that in there as an example. Either that or I'm referencing some other version of the ladder that somebody else wrote, which is possible.
Yeah.
Idea. Yeah. Those are takeaways from that where you can use to just gauge how the interaction is going and kind of drive, a certain outcome if you want.
And you can usually tell when it's time to kiss. You'll have that electricity in the air, that vibe, that you feel it. You know, once you become calibrated, it's really easy to kind of do you can methodically escalate as well.
It's a great word, calibrated.
The main thing is being able to recognize when it's time to move things along. You're the guy. It's your job to be the man of action, to be not only confident, but also competent in how to lead the interaction. It's like you're a guy. It's your job. Sorry, don't make the rules. Mother Nature's not a feminist. I always tell women, well, guess what? For guys, suck it up, Buttercup. You still got to be able to lead and take and move things along in the right direction. Because 9 times out of 10, women aren't going to do it. And the handful of times that they do, it's going to feel really weird because we're just not built for women being in that leadership role, I guess.
Yeah.
When women come on strong to the guys, it really feels awkward.
If a woman's escalating, you miss the cues a long time ago.
There's that too. Now, different cultures have different, standards of expectations and things we're going to be acclimated to.
Yeah.
Like when I went over to the UK, women there were a bit more sexually aggressive. So it's not a lot different from the US, but there was a subtle difference that you'll pick up on pretty quick if you're not used to it. But if you are, then things move a little bit faster over there. At least that's how it was about 20 years ago.
I think that's key to staying out of the friend zone. And then, the last minute resistance piece is what happens when you escalate too much or too hard.
Yeah, you kind of blew through some comfort building phases right there and you escalated too fast. That's what ends up happening. LMR is, and like I said, this is a very controversial statement, but it shouldn't be because a lot of cases where women, yes means yes, no means no. It's not that black and white. A lot of times no means not yet. They like you, but you moved a little bit too fast. So back off. Then when they're comfortable, then you can try again. That's what that kind of LMR is all about. It's just not a no. It just means not yet. Slow down. Doesn't mean shut everything off and then walk away, because now you're both going to be unhappy in a lot of cases. Whereas if you just slow things down again, wait 5 minutes, try again, if you're feeling it. So maybe you just went for the makeout and you're in the public. She's not into that. Too much PDA. There's social judgments to be mindful of. You don't want to do that. Get her someplace private. Maybe she'll be inclined to. You just got to be calibrated and make sure you're doing all the stuff that you're supposed to do. And if you remember the old ABC model, I think it was the mystery method, attraction, comfort, and something else. I forget how it went, but comfort building is a key portion of the whole process. Depending on how fast the women want to move, if there's alcohol involved, there's a lot of dynamics that are included in this process that you got to be mindful of. Experience will be your number one teacher. But as far as the purpose of this course, LMR, just be mindful that no doesn't always mean no. Sometimes it just means you screwed up, wait, do a bit of recovery, build some more comfort, try again later.
For those watching at home, I think what's key to understand here is when you say, I mean, because it's controversial, right, to say no doesn't always mean no. Well, yeah, sometimes no means no, for sure.
Absolutely. And you'll know it when it's time, when it really isn't no.
The way you'll know it is watch her actions, don't listen to what she says outright, right? If she's still clinging on to you and she's taking your shirt off and she's making out with you and saying, I can't do this. And she's still advancing the interaction.
Judging by their actions, not what they say.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Look, if she slaps you across the face and kicks you out of her house, like probably
that was a hard no. Yeah.
Go home and take a cold shower. Like, that's fine. Like, obviously that's a no. But the point is, like, You got to watch what they do and not always listen to what they say, right?
And a lot of this is just comes down to being it's developing that awareness of the nuance.
Yeah.
A lot of guys who need this material don't have that background. They don't have the expertise. They don't have that experience. Well, we're here to tell you this is what you got to be mindful of if you're out there and things are going not in the right direction that you think it is. A lot of times, things are still going in the right direction. You just don't know it. And if you remember back to the keep it simple, stupid methodology, the KISS principle, approach and stay until they tell you to leave or they walk away. It's the same thing with LMR. If they're still there and things are still moving in the right direction, but they told you no, but they haven't left, they haven't told you to get lost, it's just a maybe. You're in that gray area where you got to pause, calm things down, build some comfort, try back again later. Let's see. Next slide. Humble bragging. Guys are guilty of this too, but here's an example that kind of applies to women. Humble bragging is just, it's making good aspects of you seem bad as a way to brag. And this example is a really crystal clear example of this. I don't know if you can read it from the, here, I'll full screen it so you can definitely see this.
I can see it. Yeah.
Yeah. The viewers may have an issue, but yeah, this is definitely clutch. So, girl number one is telling about how bad it was that blah, blah, blah. Guys were hitting on her, how problematic it is, reasons. Girl number two one-ups her, showing that she's more hot than the other one. She's more guys like her. It's so bad. You get the idea. You see this stuff all the time in social media. You see it on Facebook. You see it in real life when women talk. It's almost always some example of this in that 18 to 25-ish range. You see this kind of one-upsmanship all the time.
We were talking earlier before the show started about Jennifer Maleski and her YouTube channel. And she made the point on one of our videos, I forget the title, about women that do this, right? And they bring up, you know, the feminist women will say, well, I hate catcalling or whatever. And they'll bring it up and say, oh, I can't believe this. I just got catcalled. It's so, you know, uncalled for, blah, 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 blah. But she's got this hypothesis, and it's really interesting. 9 times out of 10, whatever the, you know, just forget about the statistic itself, but vast majority of the time, it is they want to feel pretty. They want to feel noticed, right? And so they're bringing it up as a humble brag. And I think what that goes back to is the piece that we talked about with the feminine imperative is validation is sex for women. And to be validated amongst their peers is just as good as a man's validation, right?
To an extent, yeah. I think validation, like we were talking about before, it's validation to women is almost like a form of commitment to guys. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
How when guys want to be, when they want to feel attractive, it's women respecting them, showing them, deferring to their judgment or their leadership. It's kind of the same thing with women getting attention from guys. That validation is a huge ego stroking.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody, it feels good to get validation. There's no doubt about it. But there's definitely something to it that women derive that I think is on another level from what guys experience.
Yeah, it's because that men are designed to validate themselves. Self-validation is a piece of this, yep. Right? Women will never seek validate. Well, I don't want to say never. Women will, by and large, not seek validation within themselves. They seek it externally.
Yeah, that's a fair statement. That's a key distinction between men and women as well. I think right there is that guys tend to be more internally validated and driven, whereas women are more, they soak it up from external sources. Absolutely. And that can really ruin a relationship if there's only so much energy to give in a day. And when women are giving it out to other men outside the relationship, then the relationship's going to suffer. If they've got work husbands, so to speak, that's going to be a problem. If they've got other guys on their brain, orbiters, that's going to be a problem. Yeah. Orbiters are a big problem right there. That's another example of that. So be mindful of where their attention and focus is in the relationship if you're in a relationship. Women talking about other guys to you when you guys are supposed to be in, you know, your personal time, that's a huge red flag right there. You know, you'll often hear this about a guy that's ribbing them. Maybe it's a negative kind of thing where it doesn't matter. The guy's on their brain, and that's a huge red flag in itself.
It can be. I would say there's a small caveat there. If they're actively seeking validation from other men, yes, 100% agree with you. There are some cases where a woman's going to bring up like, hey, this guy from work actually said something I'm not really comfortable with.
Well, that's the exception, yeah.
And I'm letting you know because I'm trying to shut it down. Like I'm not – she's trying to tell you that she's not getting validation from another guy. And that's great. That's what you want. Like if she brings it up, you shouldn't
be – unwanted attention.
Right. Yeah, you shouldn't be the insecure guy and worry about like, well, I'm gonna go, you know, whoop this guy's ass. You know, that's not the right approach there. The right approach is that you say like, well, you know, hey, I'm glad that you're not taking that seriously. I'm glad that you recognize that's you know not something that is really helpful for you at all. Right.
In that example, she has taken on the mantle of avoiding the appearance of impropriety. Mm-hmm. Most times women won't do that. This is where you got to be able to judge, is this woman relationship material or not? And avoiding the appearance of impropriety is huge when it comes to long-term relationship viability.
Massive. Once you get calibrated, yeah. You recognize the difference of like, she's not seeking validation from other guys. She's bringing it up because she's trying to tell you she's not doing that.
There's a very fine line, but it's very important to know. This one is to the viewers, for the commenters. Please keep comments coming. We're going to go back. We're going to get through this section and then we're going to circle back around at the end of the video and then start addressing the comments. All right.
Already
so right now, there are a couple in here that's pretty good. Also throw the banner up here. Likes help out immensely with percolating the channel up in the YouTube search algorithms. So please help us out. Like the videos. Also, if you like this stuff, be sure to subscribe, and you've got to hit that notification bell. Otherwise, you're not going to get updates on when future videos go live. YouTube's funny like that. Leftist social media in general are clamping down on anything that doesn't kind of what we just talked about. Adheres to the feminine imperative. Mm-hmm. So folks like us, we're at risk. So we need your support. Make sure you're liking the videos, hitting subscribe, and ringing that notification bell. And also, please keep the comments coming. Also, in the future, if you guys have videos you want to see, eventually we're going to get through all the course material, and it's going to be your comments that are going to drive where the channel goes in the future. So if there's specific topics you want to see us cover that you need help with, please post them down below so we can get this in the future. All right, so moving on. We'll bring this dude up. Was there anything else on the previous section?
No, I think we pretty much covered the humble brag piece.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, so hypergamy. This is a huge subject, and this is really critical when it comes to the red pill in general. Also, the feminine imperative. This drives so much in society. Hypergamy is what most people just call dating or marrying up. Women typically date men a few years older than themselves who are often in a higher socioeconomic class. Now, in a dating sense, this translates to being attracted, blah, blah, blah. You get this. Now, here's the consequence of modern dating and feminism and women breaking the glass ceiling, as we talked about before. The higher up that women climb the socioeconomic ladder, the smaller the pool of men above them becomes. This is the paradox of success when it comes to women. So for women, and we should probably put this in the women's show at some point too, because this is really important. The fewer guys that are above them, the smaller that pool of available men to date into becomes. This is the Feminism's Terrible Blunders, a blog online. I forget who made it, but they kind of touches on this as well. It's a good one. I'll post it in the description later.
Well, this drives a lot of the other stuff that we talked about. The law of hypergamy is that women are most attracted to their best possible option that's available to them, period.
It is. Unfortunately, with the way society has kind of gone off the rails a little bit, women will often compare their highlight reel to any guy they're going to judge in the future. So even though a 8 and a woman's maybe a 6, and that 8 could get 7s and 8s themselves, sometimes 9s, that 6 now thinks she's entitled, or her bare minimum now is going to be 8s from there on in the future. This is how you get alpha widows.
Oh, yeah.
So this can really screw up women's mating strategies long term. And we've seen this throughout society in all kinds of examples. Celebrities have terrible relationship histories. And a lot of it becomes this kind of thing. They can't date regular people because they're used to the cream of the cream, the creme de la creme, the top-notch guys in society, that top 10%, these celebrities.
Chris Rock has an interesting comedy bit on this, which is that men cannot go back sexually and women cannot go back in lifestyle, right? And so if they have exes, yeah, that means the lifestyle has got to move up. It can't move backward.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I can definitely see it from a guy's perspective where, you know, once you've gotten a woman of a certain physical attractiveness, that's going to drive your standards in the future. Totally. Or anything else is going to be a letdown. I can see that. I'll concede that. But definitely from a relationship perspective, if they've, like I said before, if they've gotten guys of a certain echelon before, they've shown that they can do it once, but they've never taken into account that their looks are depreciating. What do they bring to the table?
Well, the ego lies to everybody. The ego will lie to everybody. And so women will listen to the ego and they'll say, you know, I don't see any reason why I can't be, you know, Sex in the City and just pulling whoever I pulled in my 20s, right?
It, right. And that's such a bad show. And it screwed up a whole generation of women.
I don't know.
Joke that, Joe. I've seen a few clips and I know right about it. But
right. You've delved into this. I can tell. Yeah.
So I used to joke that Steve Jobs was the world's greatest cock block for inventing the iPhone and ushering in the age of social media. Because anytime you go to a bar or a club now, you look around, everybody's got their noses buried in their phone. There's no socializing going on like it used to back when we were kids. I remember back in the day, you went to a club and that was all you had, was what was in that club. So you were only competing against your local market. Now, with the advent of Tinder, Match, OkCupid, and all this other shit, you're competing against all of the guys in your entire geographical area.
You're like a sexual economist, Joe.
It's just the competition's never been higher, and it's not going to change anytime soon. So you have got to really step up your game. I just realized, I'm like, is my chin getting cut off when I slouch down?
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay. Oh, it's just okay.
You were going off on this economic tangent. I love it. But for some reason, the phrase "the elasticity of demand" was like just stuck in my head, and I couldn't get that out.
Yep. Any others on this subject? Because hypergamy is a big subject.
Oh my god! Yeah.
But it's criticality to everything else. But as a term, it's pretty straightforward. Women date and marry up. That's all there is to it.
No, I think it's so interesting that practically you could communicate this concept to a non-red pill guy, a run-of-the-mill guy, and they would generally buy into it.
Well, it's not a red pill term. This comes from psychology and social sociology.
Sociology?
So God damn it, I can't talk tonight. Yeah. I started drinking beer, so I'm off the rails now. Yeah. Yep. Biology and sociology and social psychology was what I was trying to say. Mm-hmm. This is all evolutionary biology, evolutionary psychology 101. All right, moving on. Indicators of interest and disinterest. I got a whole section on this. We're going to dive into a bunch of them, but that's not tonight. Right now, we're just introducing the terms. IOIs are just cues that a woman's interested. IODs are cues that a woman's disinterested. You'll see things like closed arms, closed off body language. Maybe she is giving you that playful shoulder punch on the, that's a key one. Things like that. Mere exposure. The more we're exposed to something, the more likely we're going to prefer it. This one's key in advertising. People don't know this, that the reason that Santa Claus is red and white is from old commercials that Coca-Cola used to do. Remember the polar bears? Well, it goes back even further than that. So the colors that we have associated with Christmas and Santa Claus in particular comes from Coca-Cola's advertising. That's mere exposure in a nutshell. This is why Coke's wildly more popular than Pepsi.
Interesting.
It's just everybody knows it. You see it everywhere. So you're more likely to buy what you're familiar with.
How's that apply to the red pill?
So probability kind of plays in on this in a minute. I'll talk to that in just a second here. Mm-hmm. But the more you're exposed to something, the more likely you're going to prefer it. So think of it in terms of, you know what? We'll jump ahead. I'm going to just bring up to probability. We'll just jump ahead.
Perfect.
So the tendency for people to form friendships or romantic relationships with those they encounter often. The more likely you're running into people, the more likely you are to form a relationship with them. You're going to prefer them over other people that you don't know. So this is where warm approach comes into play. Mm-hmm. If you are socializing, where you know people, you've got friends of friends, you're in parties, you're at events in public where you're all going to know each other, you're more likely to form friendships and relationships with those that are in your social circle, school, and work. So, and I forget the study. I think it was one of Stanley Milgram's, maybe. Don't quote me on this. In big cities, like 80% of relationships occur with people that live within two blocks of one another. You can have 10 million people in a city. Odds are you're going to end up dating somebody that lives in your geographical region right there within two blocks.
Yeah.
So that's propinquity and how kind of mere exposure kind of intersects with that. There's that term, intersection. But yeah, exposure is huge.
It's the opposite of the Russian bride effect, right? Is that, you know, for the most part, people are going to, I mean, look, you get on Tinder and it tells you who is within your local area, right?
It does.
You're more likely to be, I think there's a proximity, but also familiarity piece to that.
And it's the familiarity is what it's all about. So think about if you're a regular at a bar or a gym or what have you, you're a regular at blah. When people say, hey, let's go out and go do something, more often than not, you're going to instinctively prefer whatever it is you're already familiar with than trying something new. This is the mere exposure effect in practice. So think of it in terms of bartenders. You get to know a bartender. Somebody new comes in, you see your bartenders over the other end of the bar, more likely you're going to go sit on the other end of the bar where the bartender you know is at. You've got those social alliances built. Those are formed out of that mere exposure effect. In part, that's a piece of it. So I don't want to go into this too much because we're coming up on a really fun part. Oops, wrong page.
Oh, don't skip over nice guys. Yeah.
Yes. So nice guys finish last, as we all know the saying. Being nice. So this kind of goes back to investment. We talked about this before, where people prefer what they have to work for versus more than what they have just been given freely. So being nice to women is in of itself not an attractive quality. You're not going to attract women by being nice to them. Women do want guys, nice guys, so, you know, the quote unquote nice guys, if they're already attracted to them. That's the key distinction that a lot of guys miss out on. If you're just being nice to people in general, cool, you're a nice guy. You're not threatening. You're not dark triad. You're boring.
Let me draw a distinction here. Yeah, let me draw a distinction here. There's a difference between being nice and being kind, right? Yeah. Like, don't kick puppies, Yeah. Right. Like, don't scream at babies when you're out, you know, amongst women trying to interact with people and trying to interact with other guys and other gals and all this stuff. Like, don't do this stuff that's just, you know, absolutely seen as, you know, boneheaded, evil, you know, really, really just aggressive, you know, a-hole stuff. Like, don't do all that behavior. Like, be kind. There's no reason not to be polite. And what it shows is that you're comfortable enough with yourself that you can give kindness to other people and not expect anything back. It shows abundance mentality. It shows a sense of self-confidence. Being nice is a little bit different. Nice, it comes with a lot of connotation of covert contracts. You're being needy. You're being clingy. That's not what you want to be, right? Being confident and being kind to people and being kind to the people that you're around is no sweat, right? It doesn't take anything away from you. But when you're needy and you have covert contracts, then you're a nice guy, right? Then you expect other things in return. Then you build that resentment. And, you know, why isn't she giving me what I expected of her, but I didn't express? And that's just a recipe for disaster, man.
Indeed. Going right back to where we were. There we go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Like you said, it's the covert contracts of niceness. If you're being excessively nice, it comes off as insincere because they're going to read the subtext of it probably better than you realize you're putting out there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And also, it's like I said, it's the orbiter kind of effect where you're giving something away without getting anything in return. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to be kind and just be nice in general. But if you're doing it with the expectation of trying to make them interested in you, it's not going to work. That's not the way we're built. Get over yourself. This is where you got to realize there's a lot more to building attraction and interest and intrigue than simply being nice for the sake of being nice. Moving on. Or not. Let's see. Come on. One-itis. There we go.
Oh, my God.
Man. Rolla did a really good thing about the one. The one doesn't exist. If a girl's one in a million, I forget. There's like buku, dude. It's, yeah, 330 or 150 women in the U.S.
Yep.
Think about this. So, yeah, about 300 million people. If half of them are women, that gives you about, 150 million people. If she's one in a million, there's 150 people out there for you. Mm-hmm. But that's, it kind of puts it into context. You scale this up over the globe, there's billions of people. What, 7 billion people right now, the population? Thereabouts.
Yeah.
Look, so I mean, there's thousands of women out there right there, right now, that are a good match for you.
Statistically speaking, like there's enough women out there that can check enough boxes.
Yeah.
For any guy.
But the main thing to take away from this is the intense obsession with one person. Maybe it's the one that got away or a girl you like in your building. This can quickly turn into being a stalker move, so avoid it at all costs. If you realize that you're getting hung up on one person, just check yourself. You do not have abundance. You are overly invested. Start thinking rationally about why and backtrack from there and start going in a better direction that's healthier for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like with bad relationships. The best way to get over one is to get under a few others. Mm-hmm. If you find yourself still stuck on one girl, date a bunch of others and you realize that she's just one of many.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this is general, like, don't put people up on a pedestal advice, adulting 101, yeah, as I call it, right? But especially women, like, don't put women up on a pedestal, right?
Yeah. It's not good for you. It's not good for them, but no one benefits from it.
It's just not healthy.
So, well, they're going to benefit from the validation and attention, but that's not necessarily healthy either. So, is there any other comments, concerns? What you guys got? Anything else? All right. Orbiters. We kind of touched on this earlier with being friend-zoned, and we kind of touched a few reasons right here of why women will keep guys around as orbiters. So, you know, resources, there's lunch, taking out the lunch, stuff like that, or transportation, validation, and attention. And every once in a while, it does pay off for guys, and it is just their turn when the girl has to break glass for dick. So,
I can't blame them. I mean, who wouldn't want a sugar mama?
That's a little bit different. Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, most times why guys allow this to happen to themselves is a lack of abundance. Mm-hmm. So they're just sniffing around waiting for their chance.
Yeah. Hoping that what they're putting forth is going to work.
Right. And a lot of times it's just frustrating. All right. Peacocking. Now there's two ways of doing peacocking. There's the good way and there's the bad way. The good way is where you stand out in a crowd in a positive manner that you're going to give women and in a reason to talk to you that's socially acceptable to that that social setting. The bad way is social suicide. This is where you are peacocking in a bad way. It's socially unacceptable, and you're just really, really harming your chances in that setting. A good example of social suicide is where you run around hitting on all the girls in a club. All the girls see you doing that. So next time you go to approach another girl, they're like, no, they're going to bat you away. But peacocking in a sense where you don't have to have a big top hat, 4-inch heels, and black fingernails. All you have to do is dress about 10% better than the average or have one nice thing going on about you. Maybe you're built. Maybe you got a nice watch. Who knows? Whatever is acceptable to that situation that's going to stand out in a positive light, go for it.
Oh, man. If I had a dollar for the amount of times a sport coat actually got me noticed by a guy or a girl, you know, just saying like, oh, you're really well dressed for this event. It's, I mean, I know I'm, you know, on this show, I got a hat and a jacket and everything, but the sport coat will really get you, you know, away with murder for the most
especially part. If you're younger too. And most guys don't in the college years, don't wear those.
Yeah.
Now it might come off as a preppy. Now back in the day, like when I was a kid, like the pop collar was what a lot of guys did to stand out, but people always made fun of them and they never knew that. So yeah, you're standing out, but not necessarily in a good way.
Some level of distinctiveness, so, right? Like it, you know, instead of maybe not a members only jacket, but like if you, for example, if you've got I like the Yeezys, right? If you got a colorful pair of sneakers that are nice, maybe you spent a little extra money on those, you know, you got some loud sneakers, you know, wear them. Absolutely wear them. You know, wear them with a sport coat if you can pull it off. Hell, I mean, whatever, you know, go on Pinterest, look up a lot of style inspiration, do that. But, you know, have a distinctive feature, right? Like I'm thinking back to in Rebel Without a Cause, James Dean had the Harrington jacket, the red Harrington jacket. And in a given situation, if you walk into a bar or if you walk into a social situation, if you've got a red jacket on, people are going to notice you.
Interesting. Never thought about that. Now, red is an actual, there's some color background to that. The attraction triggers. Red was a big one. Black was another. There was really only two I remember being in a positive light. Others, colors will definitely jump out in the crowd, but they may not be beneficial for being seen as attractive. But yeah, red and black were the two biggies.
Oh yeah. This is why women notice the guy with the motorcycle jacket, right? Or whatever that is.
Well, now you're kind of getting into looks as well. This is the Art of Seduction has a really good treatise on the different archetypes. You got the dandy, you got the rebel, like you were saying, you've got the jock. There's all these different archetypes that guys kind of fit into naturally. Sometimes you might fit into multiple, but for the type of women that you're interested in, work backwards from there. What kind of men or archetype would they more likely to be attracted to? If you have an idea of what that is and you fit towards that, you're maximizing your potential. So we talked about this before where in the bell curve model, where on one end of the spectrum are women that are going to be naturally interested in your archetype without you having to do anything. On the other end of the spectrum is women that are absolutely just turned off, not going to do it. Maybe they're gay, who knows? They're not going to be interested in you no matter what you do. And then in the middle of the bell curve is women that are indifferent who may go either way for you. So with naturals and a lot of the PUAs that I've seen and guys that are good with women in general, they are excellent at screening for women that are naturally interested in them, whatever archetype they may fall into. So be mindful of that. It's a bit of a departure from this, but make sure you know what your archetype is and then try to fulfill it to the best of your ability. Because the women that are interested in the archetype, your job's done. All you got to do now is just go out and put yourself out there and run the numbers.
Yeah, you're just talking about market segmentation, essentially, and just making yourself look distinctive. So I subscribe kind of to the keep it simple, stupid model. Mm-hmm. And that is, I have never met a woman that did not have Chris Hemsworth on their, I would bang him at like any circumstance. I don't care if I was married, seven kids at all costs. Like, Chris Hemsworth is on their list. So just,
and it's Chris Hemsworth as Thor, not Chris Hemsworth as Ghostbusters.
That's exactly it. Just look like Chris Hemsworth, right? Like, so I subscribe.
It's tough to have that kind of physique without that kind of backing of a big studio. I'll tell you that right now, firsthand experience. It is tough to have that kind of diet, discipline, and training. Who has that kind of time?
Yeah, if my full-time job was to, you know, have a personal chef make me meals and just work out all day, like maybe I'd get there. Probably not. I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, but me, at my build, I did the math on this. At his waist size for his height, I'd have to have a 29-inch waist. That was me like in eighth grade.
Yeah, I haven't had that. I mean,
yeah,
high school.
Right. It's tough to do. And you got to have that body type as well. But you're right. Yeah. Women have him on their list because he's their hall pass for a reason.
But just emulate that, right? That's the peacocking piece. It's like, you know, as Thor, he's got long hair, right? Women notice that. Women notice the man bun. Women notice a ridiculous mustache. Women notice whatever it is that's just a distinctive feature. But to your point of like, be intentional about it, right? If you're an athletic guy, right, and you're going to have those loud sneakers, or you're going to have, you know, the tight workout athleisure kind of type of thing. Just whatever it is, like, make it a part of your day, your day to day, your discipline thing. You're going to work on your wardrobe.
Own your shit.
Yeah, this gets to like levels of dread, all that stuff. But you know, peacocking is not just looking like a douche when you go out to the club. It's actually being intentional and standing out.
There's a really good channel. I forget the total thing. It's Alpha M something. And he's been on Shark Tank twice now. One he was doing, I think it was like a hair grooming product. I forget what the other one was. But he was on one of the sharks. He's got his own channel and he's a business guy. And he had him on the show. And like, well, why did we go into business together? And they talked about it and the history of the show. But anyways, his channel has a lot of good information that we talk about right here. So I would just throw that out there. Alpha M. If you do a Google search for it, you'll see him. Let's see here.
Try to pull that up here on the next topic here.
Yep. Plate spinning. Now, this is huge. Again, Rollo wrote a pretty good segment on this with in the book. When spinning plates, a man will have a natural, subconscious, but not exclusively understanding that if one prospect does not work out, others may. And here's the clutch part when it comes to plate spinning and having abundance. Your behavior will change in such a way that women will pick up on the subtext that if they're not, like, for lack of a better term, if they're not on their best behavior and meeting your needs, they're going to get nexted. So when you have that kind of abundance, that strength, that power, that status of having other women, it really sets a lot of the relationships straight. Because they know, and you know, if things don't work out, they're out of there.
Yeah, and this is about who you bring into the fold and who you don't, and what you will tolerate and what you won't.
Right. And I think it is written in Uncle Vaz, they wrote about this stuff before, with when you have options, it instinctively makes you the prize. Now, it doesn't make things easier. It just makes things it sets the frame. So having that framework already baked in by just having options, man, what a game changer that is. I'll tell you that.
Totally.
Confidence is derived from options. Now, it kind of, yes, gives men the ability to next women without worrying what's next. It is empowering. I'll tell you that.
Well, I'll tell you, most guys don't invest in that iron rule of Tomasi, which is that it will always be easier to actually put your time and attention into a newer relationship.
Yes. Rooting for garbage.
For guys that aren't married with kids, like that's maybe a special case, right? Like, you're going to approach that differently. But for guys that are in an LTR, or guys that are even, you know, engaged or married with no kids, like, you, if you are caught up in the relationship and it's just, you know, it's in a bad frame, it's not the way that you would really want it to be. You know, one of the big problems that you have is you have been focusing far too much on one woman, right?
Yep. And you're not going to be able to cut bait if you don't have other prospects already lined up. It's the opposite of the abundance mentality.
Yeah.
Your success and relationship goals, it's all wrapped up into one person. It's not a good place to be in if that relationship's going south. Now, how do you navigate this when you're already in a long-term monogamous relationship? Man, it's tough. You got to really, this is where being able to have the experience to have screened for a woman that is good long-term relationship prospects is so critical. The long-term relationship, the monogamous relationship, as it says right here, is a byproduct, not a goal. You go out, you screen, you filter, you build abundance, you build up your soft harem, you, by spinning plates is what that is. You get all of these options available to you and you start screening for ones if you are LTR minded. You don't have to be. Not everybody's cut out for that. And if you're not, know yourself. Make sure you know what your long-term relationships goals are. You went and did the work that we talked about in the first two episodes. And you have an idea of what you want from a relationship and a person in that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but you know, all I want in life to have is options. And really understanding that at a deep level and realizing that you're going to be okay no matter what. You're going to be able to take care of whatever your needs and wants are, regardless of what's going on in your relationship. Mm-hmm. Understanding that is going to give you a much better orientation. And what it comes down to is not just people think about plate spinning and they think about like, oh, I just want to go out and just bang as many women as possible. That's not what it's about. What it's about is not sacrificing your self-respect. And when you think about the status of women that you actually will let into your inner circle or into the fold or whatever you want to call it, but you are actually cognizant of the time and attention that you're investing in them. Right, is I'm not going to give that away for free, or I'm not going to do that if I'm not getting anything out of the relationship. Because again, one side of relationships are unhealthy. I think all of this ties together to a certain extent, but the big piece for me here is you're not sacrificing your self-respect.
Yep. The last two bits here, just kind of piggyback on that, is to be honest. If you're not interested in a monogamous relationship, don't imply exclusivity. Make them ask. And if they are going to ask, be honest about it. And we kind of talked about this up the top, where women are more inclined to share an alpha than to have a beta loser all to themselves. Mm-hmm. Just human instincts. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants a winner. And you know, they'll gnash their teeth and they'll whinge about it. But more often than not, it's been my experience that they will be more likely to just put up with it if the guy's a philanderer than it will be to dump that relationship, be alpha widowed, and then later resent some beta bucks they got when they're 35. Mm-hmm. Just the way it kind of shakes out in the modern age. And then lastly, develop buffers. This is kind of like what women do with orbiters. Social media. They'll leave you on read. They won't respond to your texts. They'll only come around when they need you for whatever it is they need you. That is that as an orbiter, you're fulfilling that role in that dynamic. Buffers for guys kind of work the same way. So whatever it is that you want out of the relationship, then you can use those buffers as tools to keep them at arm's length if they're getting too clingy or needy. Mm-hmm. I probably just pissed off like a whole bunch of people. But you know what? Yeah. It is what it is.
You pissed off a whole bunch of clingy and needy people.
Which yes. Let's see. Women freely spin plates. We're usually just oblivious. That is so damn true. Especially in this day and age with like Tinder and all this, man, women have at least five guys lined up at a moment's notice if they really needed it.
It relates to the orbiter thing and it relates to the friend zone thing is they don't view it as the friend zone. These guys are on the back burner, right? These are plates that are at a lower level, right? They're guys that they haven't banged yet, but they might blossom into something.
They're just friends.
Yeah, they're just friends, but until they're not, right?
Exactly. And this is, like I said, the break glass for dick. That's that concept. Women don't keep guys as orbiters unless they're getting something from it. Now, not all orbiters are being spun as plates for the break glass for dick. Certain ones will be. And you'll never know where you are on that spectrum as a guy. That's just the reality of the situation. Unless they're being overtly flirtatious with you. And even then, that's not a guarantee.
Yeah, you don't need to know where you stand. You just need to know how many indicators of interest are you getting, really, is what it comes down to.
Yep. So, and again, it's the covert contracts. Women are way more capable when it comes to subtext and subterfuge. They're just way more adept at it than guys are. Guys are oblivious in most cases when it comes to subtext. Meter detention. Spinning plates helps tremendously about we talk about this. You're creating scarcity. You're keeping it at arm's length. Mm-hmm. And again, it prevents overinvestment. And I wish I would have taken my own advice on this in the past, years ago, because I got a little bit too close for comfort with one or two that ended up blowing up. And I could have avoided that if I had just kind of kept them at arm's length just a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that kind of completes plate spinning. Pre-selection. So you know what this is. This comes from the POA terms. It's also from social psychology and all that. Pre-selection is women tend to prefer guys that women are already interested in. It's an evolutionary shortcut that we think, the hypothesis, is that women developed this as a shorthand for telling if a guy is safe, attractive, blah, blah, blah. If other women are already interested in him, then, what's going on over here? You get that kind of impact going on.
One thing I would add here is it really does relate to the hypergamy piece, meaning that like a woman who is a four, right? And the social proof of a woman who is a four will probably not mean a lot to a woman who's an eight or nine, right? Fair. These women that are at a specific level, they look to their peers or women that are above them for social proof.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So when it comes to pre-selection, like a woman who is an eight, a super hot woman, is not going to care what some fat troll is banging or what she sees as a comfort, because she doesn't have the ability to disseminate to an extent, you know, what is a great quality in a man, because they don't have a lot of options.
What I've seen in those kind of instances is when the four, so to speak, starts kind of bragging about it, mm-hmm. the claws come out from the other ones.
Yeah.
They will make sure she knows her place.
Yeah. But not only that, like there's some discrediting of their actual standing and their opinion, but also there's a little bit of the big dick energy on the woman's part of like, I'm going to make sure you know where you're at in the hierarchy here. Like you're just being clear about like you're lower in the social pecking order. Women are super observant about that.
Well, men and women don't compete when it comes to the sexual marketplace. They compete guys compete with guys, women compete with women. An example of this would be like when guys chest thump and they talk about how whatever it might be, they're not going to say that they're not going to compete with women with that four. It's out of the spectrum. They're not doing that.
Yeah.
Guys will compete with each other for status and for jockeying in that position of who's going to go after the girl. Where women will kind of compete with each other in that sense, going for the guys, they're not going to compete with each other respectively. Does that there's a line between the two.
I agree. I think guys are a little bit more obtuse. Some of them will sometimes get insecure and compete with a guy who's a much lower status just because they're insecure for whatever reason.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is guys will compete with guys, women will compete with women, but men and women aren't going to compete in the sexual marketplace against each other in that sense. You see it in the economic sense with jobs and all that in the workforce. But why would a guy compete with a woman if they're not going after the same thing? Maybe the girl's bi and she's going for another girl and she's a four and the girl's a six or an eight and you're an eight going for the same girl. Now that's a different dynamic. Then you are competing for the same.
Yeah.
That's a bit different. That's outside of the scope of this conversation.
It really is. So with that in mind, pre-selection. Yes, the women tend to prefer males who have already been chosen and selected. It's just the fast forward button.
And it's not even for humans. This is across a bunch of mammalian species. Mm-hmm. So we see this in apes, orangutans, the whole gamut. Humans too.
Social proof is a whole nother topic in and of itself that we're not going to touch on, but it's a deep one.
It is. We'll see where we're at.
Not tonight, at least. Yeah.
I don't know. We're crushing this.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Propinquity, we kind of already talked about that. Like attracts like. The higher people's propinquity level, the more likely they'll form some kind of a relationship. Again, so you're more likely to form a relationship with somebody in your same building than you are in the same city, than you are in the same state, than you are in the same country. It's these bubbles that kind of just balloon out. Mm-hmm. So the closer you are in physical proximity, the more likely you are to form a relationship with them. And not just in physical proximity, but also in your social proximity. So those that are in your social circle, you're more likely to form relationships with than you are from people that are not in your social circle, because you're less likely to encounter them on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, we talked last week about If I'm remembering correctly, the question was, what can I do as a young 20s guy to differentiate myself against, you know, older guys that might be more successful or what have you, or accomplished? And the thesis basically was, you know, play up your strengths. And I think one of those is, you know, you are more proximal. So if you're in your young 20s, you are much more proximal to young 20s women than upper 30s guy, right? Like we run the risk of being the creepy guy out at the bar, right? That's a little bit older than the rest of the group, right? So you have access that is, you know, far beyond what guys like you and I would have, you know, in a younger 20s environment.
We joked about this before the show, you know, taking on a job at a school just so you'd have, you'd be in that proximity, but it's true. It's, So even though guys who are a little bit older that women will naturally prefer per hypergamy, guys that are older won't naturally have access to those women that are younger if they're not in that proximal kind of that proximity. Yeah. Let's see here. Let me take a look really quick at one last thing here, because we are coming up. It's been an hour. I do want to get through some of these questions.
Yeah, we should.
Why don't we go ahead and we'll call it right there for the course. We will pick up with Rationalization Hamster next week, and we're going to go back through these questions because there's a lot of them.
I love talking about the hamster and the hamster maze, but for sure we should grab some questions.
Yeah, it's going to be fun next week. Let's see here. Everybody should read The Rational Male, Preventive Medicine.
I would agree.
I recommend them.
That's foundational learnings, right?
Rollo, if you're out there, I'm looking forward to having you on the show sometime. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. We actually were chatting on TRP Red briefly, so we'll see what happens. Let's see. The line between – this was a little while ago. Could you elaborate on the line between trying to break LMR multiple times even versus coming across as too needy and attached, thus being seen as unattractive? So we're going to get into this later in the in qualification and in building comfort and all that. When it comes right down to it, you want to be able to build comfort and then break rapport. So build rapport, break rapport. That dynamic of back and forth, slowly escalating things over time.
It's the push-pull.
It's the push-pull. It also has another term. It's called flirting.
Yeah.
So with LMR, you might have moved a little bit too fast, so you don't want to come off as needy by trying too much. This is where you're going to have to be calibrated and read the situation at hand. If they're still there, and if they're still doing what they were doing that prompted you to escalate, then maybe it's time to change things up a little bit. Maybe move to a secluded location in a venue or go home. Who knows? The context of what you were doing in that moment was off. So you've got to change things up a little bit. Maybe what was off was the amount of time that you were there together in isolation. Maybe that's all it was you just needed more time to build more comfort, and then you escalate and do that rapport break. So you've got to be able to read the situation, because again, if you keep doing it and trying, and you're socially uncalibrated, then yeah, you are going to come off as creepy or needy.
Yeah, here's the difference. And here's when you talk about the line between being needy versus trying to break last minute resistance is abundance mentality. Like, this is entirely the difference here. When you are a young guy and you realize, like, hey, I've got options. Like, if this girl doesn't want to make out with me or whatever it is, like, she doesn't want to actually advance this interaction, like, that's no sweat. Like, I'll move on to the next thing, and I'll you know, next weekend, give it another shot with another young woman. If you have that mentality and you've internalized it and you realize, like, hey, I'm a young guy, I have options, and I have a lot going for me. If you have that self-confidence, it's going to come across in spades, and women will respond to that in kind, right? They're not going, the last minute resistance is they want you to understand that they are throwing up an obstacle that it's almost by design for you to pass it, right? They want to see you succeed. I'm talking about the majority of the time, right? If it's a hard no and it's a last minute resistance, last minute resistance is different than a hard no, right? Hard no
and,
is.
Well, I just want to throw out too that this is an overlap between ASD and the LMR. A lot of times, those are just obstacles for you to overcome and then you kind of move on. It's just the natural regression that things happen that have. This way, they're trying to avoid those social consequences.
I think the best thing you can do as a young guy is build your abundance mentality to understand, like, hey, you know, there, I have other options out there. Like, if this interaction doesn't go well, then yeah, I'm going to go home and I'm going to take a cold shower, and that sucks and it's disappointing, but is what it is. Next weekend, like, I'll be, you know, talking to some other woman, not obsessed with you.
Or you do like a lot of women do, and they go out with a date with the beta bucks, and then when they get home, they get that little peck on the cheek, then they call up the booty call, the alpha fucks. So that's, you could be doing something like that where, okay, you're out with this girl, things aren't moving along at the rate that you would like.
You call up a plate.
You got it.
That's, right. If you have set yourself up for success, right? Like, you've got that girl that you can text where you can ask, are you up? Right?
Yeah. That's very empowering. This way you're not going to come off as needy or creepy with the other girl because, no big deal. Just move along.
That's true. And that's, and Joe, to your point, the best way to build abundance mentality is to have actual abundance, right? Expose yourself to as many opportunities and have as many options as possible. So,
and there is a chicken and the egg kind of effect. Well, how do you build abundance if you don't have abundance? And how do you, well, practice repetition, putting in the work. That's all there is to it.
Well, get some mentors, right? Like, figure out how to do this thing, figure out how to wrap your head around it.
And to that note, if you guys are looking for mentors and wings in your local area, hit us up. We have the fraternity now. We're doing it all out of TRP Red and through Discord. So if you haven't joined the Discord server, please go ahead and do that now, because it's all funneled through there. There and TRP Red. And then James, I don't know where he's at tonight. He had a work commitment.
He had figure skating practice.
Ah. Yep. So we'll we'll help you guys out with that as well. If you're in a local area for me, in the DC metro area, hit me up sometime. I'll be happy to go out, show you the ropes. See, where's the other question I was going to hear? Oh, this is a good one. What's the best way to deal with hypergamy as an, we kind of touched on this just a little bit ago with how do you do that? Well, you got to stand out. You got to have your options. You're always going to be competing with everybody. That's just the way it is for guys. You're competing with your peer group, your city, your region, and not just guys in your own little age segment, but in your peer group, but everybody. Because as those OKCupid research showed, men cross-culturally across all ages are almost exclusively interested in women 18 to 25. That's just where it's at. That's where our attention's at. That's biology. It's just the way it is.
I would
guys
say that,
will settle for women older than that, but if they could get women that in that peak attractive and peak fertility years, they absolutely probably would.
I would say this, like, hypergamy has a converse, right? And that is, like, if you are an 18-year-old guy and you expose yourself to as many 18-year-old girls as possible, like, you are, it goes back to the propinquity effect, right? Like, women that are close to you are going to, if they are exposed to 50 guys, right, and you are the top five, you're in the top 10 of those guys, like, what that means is play the statistics, like, get to know as many women as possible, get exposed to a large social circle of guys and gals, and just get to know people. And so
have got to be able to network.
Hypergamy, have that work to your advantage, right? If you're an 18-year-old guy, you should be in tons of social situations. You're in high school, you're about to move into college. Like, you should be exposing yourself to these groups of people that actually want to get to know other people at that age, right? Like, like, Joe and I are at the age where I've probably got, like, you know, less friends than I can count on one hand, and those are the people I value. And I'm not interested in making a ton of friends, like, by the dozens, like a young 18-year-old or young 20s person would be. So it goes back to playing to your strengths. Should I focus on self-improvement? I mean, yes, obviously lift, right? Like, get your frame together, get yourself, validate yourself, right? Like, get your mind together and don't look to other people for validation, because in your 20s, like, that's when your prime is going to be. If you're doing the work between 18 to 20 to get exposed to other people, that's when it's really going to pay off for you. It's your 20s.
Now, I am going to put on the finance hat here for a second too. In your late teens, early 20s, that's the time to take risks. Try and come up with a business idea, create your business. It's probably going to fail. The average millionaire has, the average guy that like really makes it big, like really successful, mm-hmm. they have five businesses fail before they strike it rich. Mm-hmm. So just be mindful that if you want to take risks, now is the time to do it at that age, because you've got a huge time horizon to recover from any mistakes.
Totally. Go nuts.
Yeah. So try and think about that sense too, because that's going to pay off dividends throughout your life. If you want to be like the Hugh Hefners and the Vachis of the world, where they're dating and hooking up with models well into their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s, you're only going to be able to do that if you're a just this huge business status out the wazoo kind of guy, or huge status like, what was his name? Leonardo DiCaprio. Stuff like that. If you've got to have sky-high status like that to have access to women like that throughout your life. You lay the groundwork now in your late teens, early to mid-20s. That's how it works. So otherwise, you can follow the normal track and then get a girlfriend who's a few years younger than you, and then that's that, and okay, you're done for life. Mm-hmm. So you choose which direction you're going to go. Let's see here. What other? Looking for questions here. Yes, read No More Mr. Nice Guy by Robert Glover. Unfortunately, the audiobook was taken down by Amazon. Don't know why. Pissed me off. I wanted to buy it, and then it was gone.
Back to the first week stream, like No More Mr. Nice Guy is basically the roadmap that I laid out there.
Yep. And then we'll be doing more stuff like that in the future, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. We talked about this right here. This aloofness, this kind of assholeness is tracking to the dark triad personality traits we talked about, I think, last week. Yes, yep. They are massively attractive for a lot of women, but they're terrible for building relationships if that's what your thing is. Otherwise, then yeah, dark triad will serve you very well.
I don't know. Like it's in a long-term relationship, I think if a woman is pulling some shenanigans, like let's just file all the stuff that the unwanted behaviors under shenanigans. I think if they're pulling that stuff, like being really averse to that and you know, the narcissism, you know, comes out from the dark triad piece of like, hey, I'm gonna take care of number one. Like, I'm not dealing with your nonsense. I think that can be powerful in certain doses, right? But the advice I would give, because there's another question here in the comments from Harmon about how do you keep the passive or active dread in your marriages? And as a married guy, I'd love to take that question, but it ties into that piece of like, when you talk about the levels of dread, and there's a great post on the MRP forum on Reddit about dread levels that you should absolutely read and understand the difference between passive and active dread, you should be hitting the dread button consistently. And what I mean by that is it should be surgical. Right. Like if your woman's pulling some shenanigans and you're going to, okay, I'm going to take my time and attention away. I'm not going to be the beta orbiter, even though I'm in a long-term relationship or a married relationship, I'm not going to reward her with my time and attention because she's pulling some shenanigans that I'm not really interested in.
You can absolutely be an orbiter in your own marriage and relationship. I've seen this 100%. Happen. It's terrible. It's bad. It's really, I don't know how guys end up in that situation, but it happens.
It's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it's you definitely find themselves when they're walking on eggshells. It's really bad. What's that?
No, please go ahead.
We'll get your question really quick. So I wrote the note down for a while to touch on here in a second. How was it? What?
How does it relate back to the how do you keep up the passive and active or even active dread in your marriages? I mean, really,
active dread is usually by you've got to do something that makes them cause dread, that actively causes dread.
Generally, other women are involved. Other women are causing
the dread. It's all based on that. It's all based on competition. And the underlying threat that you could level up your relationship by moving on to somebody else. That's kind of the passive where they know you can do better. That's the passive dread in my mind, where they're always on their best behavior because they know somewhere instinctively as a guy, we accepted them and that they're a depreciating asset. So they've got to step it up and make up for that over the long run. And they got to keep improving themselves and keep proving themselves Whereas for guys, we're appreciating assets over time, as long as you're putting in the work. Passive and active dread to that extent makes sure that women are also actively improving themselves over time. That's all it is, as far as I see it.
I agree. I think it comes down to capacity and capability versus opportunity. So when you talk about passive dread, if you are capable, like for example, if you lift and you're in great shape and you got a six pack, right? You don't have a dad bod. You are capable of having a lot of other options, right?
Yes.
Like you are attracting certain people. Yep. You have a capacity to attract other women, and that's fine. But if you never leave the house, you don't really have an active opportunity. So you don't, that's not active dread, right? If you just don't run in a lot of social circles, if you don't create this sense of mystery, if you don't have socialization where other women are actively with, when your wife is there or your long-term relationship woman is there, other women are coming up and going like, wow, like you look great.
It's you the mirror of
that opportunity is a big factor with active dread.
It's the mirror of pre-selection where they know if the relationship falls apart, you're going to be way better off than they will.
Oh, totally.
When that dynamic's in play, that is critical for creating the passive dread.
Goes back to Rollo's power dynamics, which is the one that needs the relationship the least is the one that holds the most power.
Yeah. Was that Rollo or was that somebody else? I know he said it, but I think somebody else had said it as well.
It might have been. Might have been. Yep.
But yeah, it's those dynamics are all in play when it comes to dread. And there's a lot more to it, but that's we could make a whole video about that. But just the crux of it is there's active and passive dread, like you said. Active are things that the guy does to create dread. Passive is things that she knows that are already foundational in the relationship that if things go south, she will be quickly replaced very easily and probably upgraded from to somebody better than she was.
Oh, yeah. We all know the guys that have
upgraded. Usually it's age related. Yeah.
A younger, better looking woman.
You got it. Younger, fitter, tighter.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's see. Moving on to the question. Or let's see here. I still love that. Be attractive. Don't be unattractive. Staying fit as an older guy is critical because like we just said, as women age, their SMV goes down. Guys, our SMV tends to go up. A lot of women, even younger women in that 18 to 25 range, like guys with a little bit of gray in their hair, salt and pepper in the beard, they dig that. That's a distinctive look that women cannot replicate. That is... Sorry, ladies. Mother Nature is not a feminist. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think this is classic. I don't even think it's Rian Stone. Ryan has quoted this so many times. I think it's his, but it probably came from somebody else. The simple fact is, like, it's so profound saying, you know, obviously be attractive. A lot of people will, you know, not give too much credence to that because they'll think like, oh, looks are what they are, right? I'm not going to be a jacked.
Yeah, the black pill guys, they're going to say that. Yeah, but that's going down a nihilistic kind of thread I don't want to talk on.
No, but to my earlier point of like, I don't look like Chris Hemsworth, neither do you, right? And that is what it is. But the simple fact is don't be unattractive. There's so many things you can do to make sure you're not unattractive, right? Keep your mouth shut, right? Like just understanding your personal power and projecting that confidence of, you know, abundance mentality. I have options. Those different things that you broadcast and understanding those is really the key of the frame piece, which is, if James were here, he'd be saying like that's the majority of it, right?
Right. So I want you all to go do something. So looks, or I should say attractiveness for men is not entirely based on your looks or your fitness. And I got one critical example. I'm going to leave you guys with this. I want you to go out there and do a Google search of Lyle Lovett. This is the guy that was married to Julia Roberts in her peak. This guy is one goofy looking dude, but I'm going to tell you right now, the reason he got that kind of success with women, it's all about the status. The guy was at the peak of his career as a country musician, status. And for whatever reason, Julia Roberts was into him and that's what happened. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be great for a long-term relationship, but I'm telling you right now that your SMV as a man only has your looks, your height. Those are only pieces of the puzzle. That's not the entire picture. All right. This is why I was telling the other guy at 18 to 20, 25, 30, that young time frame is where you want to start taking your risks to build your status because that's going to pay dividends throughout your life. That is what is a chief component of the male SMV.
100%. And for women, it's the vast majority of their attractiveness is physical looks.
Yeah, and the physical looks all come down to the hallmarks of fertility. When those start dropping off, women have got to step up their game. This is why we have the Wednesday show for women. It's the corollary to what we're doing here. It's for women. How do they maximize their SMV? And if they can't make themselves look prettier, then what do they got to do? They got to step up their game. They've got to become better people and put in the work to get the kind of guys that they want to be, that they are attracted to. And it's the same thing for guys. If you know the kind of women that you're attracted to, then you got to backtrack from there and figure out what kind of guys are they attracted to and become that kind of take on those qualities. Mm-hmm. So you've got to, if you like models, then what kind of men do models tend to go with? There's your roadmap right there.
Yeah. So just be Dan Bilzerian.
Be who?
Just be Dan Bilzerian. Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
He's a big poker player and social media persona.
Okay.
Very successful guy when it comes to women.
So I was going to think more like Leonardo DiCaprio. Physically,
yeah,
not a good looking dude, but he is just a huge celebrity. And think about it like this. We're going to talk about this in a coming video. Look at women's magazines. Okay. Notice who's buying those, or the checkout magazines you see at the in the grocery stores. All of this shit is all based on celebrity and sex. It's not men buying these magazines. Men are not attracted to celebrity. They're not attracted to status the way women are. So if you think of like status for men is like having big boobs for women. I'm trying to get a concept over here. Okay, guys, if you're not attracted to status, then how would you know how attractive it is for women? Think of it that sense. If you know, big boobs, tight butt, physically good looking, peak attractiveness, physical attractiveness, like think of that in terms of what you would want in a woman. For women, they see that as status, the hallmarks of status. This is why we did a whole show on this on the Sunday Status Report. Mm-hmm. Status. This is the number one driver of male SMV. So you can be completely unattractive, like Lovett is, in my opinion, a lot of people's opinion. But because he's at the peak of his game, or he was at the time, he had status through the roof. So he was able to have success that you and I could never see. Anyways, I don't want to bemoan. It's just, a bit of a rabbit hole. Vincent Cassell. I don't know who that is either. The name sounds familiar. I know the name. I just don't know what he looks like.
Yeah.
I'll Google it.
We got one more question from Harmon about what are the shit tests you guys still receive from your wives? Wondering if the tests change with the duration of a red-pilled marriage. I mean, yeah, they... Joe, you want to weigh in on that one to start with?
Not married anymore, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, no, you don't.
Now, you're going to see, this is why I fired her, is a lot of the henpecking, a lot of negativity. So there's different kinds of fitness tests or shit tests, depending on the relationship dynamics at play. If you've got the dread going on, you're not going to get a lot of this stuff. You're going to get softer ones, not the big, like, holy shit, no, there's no respect in a relationship kind of shit tests that a lot of guys get. It's a huge spectrum. You've got the small stuff that's really innocuous. It doesn't really matter. It's inconsequential. Don't worry about it.
Did you take out the trash type thing?
That's more kind of in the middle. Then it's like the nagging. Then you got more on the other end of the spectrum is stuff like I'm going out for a girl's night and there's nothing you can say or do about it. And then if I don't show up for 4 hours afterwards, then woe is you for even asking. There's this huge spectrum of shit tests. And we're going to talk about this, I think next week actually, of how to handle those. But how do the question of
so this is a little preview, like here. From a let's go with a very long term LTR or our wives. If you are highly entrenched with a woman, meaning like you've been together for a long time, I think for me what it comes down to a lot is congruency. So when you get shit tested, it's are you doing what you said you're going to do? The morals and structure of the guy that I've been with for a very long time, what I know about him. And you're putting kind of a microscope on that. And you're saying like, is this the same guy that I've always known that he is? Right. Completely different from a comfort test. So I'm drawing a distinction there. There's more about that. And if you want to read up on that, just go to MRP, read the sidebar, Married Red Pill on Reddit. I definitely recommend that if you're in an LTR or long-term relationship. But to get back to the question. So some examples of shit tests would be big financial decisions. This is always a sticking point when you're in a marriage. When it comes to how you're allocating resources, you're going to get shit tested in a big way. And if you're not like deering is what we call it, right? The defending, mm-hmm. explaining, if you are not, putting that forth as I need to explain myself to you, like I'm subscribing to your criticism. Like, no, you can accept criticism and say, you know what? That's interesting. Or that's amusing. You either dismiss it or you accept it. Often, when somebody is criticizing you, and it, again, as I said, it comes back to congruency. When somebody is putting a microscope up against what you're saying and doing, it's an opportunity for growth. It's an opportunity for you to say, like, look, this is the person that I am. This is the decision I made. And if you're not on board with that, then that's fine. But I'm gonna do this. Like, this is, I'm earning my money. I'm gonna spend it this way. This is the right financial decision. And to a small extent, you have to be accommodating of that other person. You can't just, you know, again, relationships are not unilateral. You have to accommodate somebody else. But if your mission is inclusive enough of the other person in the relationship, if your wife subscribes to your mission and your vision and all that, then it shouldn't
be that. If she's accepting of your frame.
If. And if you have a weak frame, then you're fucked, right?
Yeah, all bets are off.
There's the one for the broadcast. But you cannot have a weak frame. You cannot have no mission. You cannot have no vision. If you have all those things and you know exactly where you're headed and you are progressing toward that, then shit tests are easy to pass because it's not about you. It's not about your ego. It's not about your nonsense. It's about, you know what? This is better for us, honey. And if you don't want to get on board with that, that's fine. But I know that this is better for me and this is probably better for you. And if you don't want to get on board with that, then it's at your own peril.
The only really thing I have to add to this is that, so back in the military, head commander, he made a good point that when the troops stop complaining, that's when you know you're in danger as a commander, because it means people stopped caring, they gave up. It's the same thing in a relationship. If you stop getting shit tests, huge red flag. It means she's on her way out. So in a good relationship where you still manage the whole frame and things are in a good way, you're still always going to continue getting the shit tests, but it's going to be the low grade stuff that just women are just the way it is. So you're always going to get that. It's just that's nature.
You should want the shit tests because they'll make you a better man. Honestly, once you embrace that.
So, and like I said before, that is true, but the big thing is that you're not going to have these huge red flag, appearance of impropriety, shit tests that you otherwise would. So hopefully if you're in a long-term relationship, you're not getting those disappearing after clubs or shit like that, you know?
Yeah, you shouldn't be having shenanigans on her part or knockdown, right, drag out fights, or I'm going to take the kids and I'm going to go, I'm going to go leave for 2 weeks and not tell you where I'm going. You shouldn't accept that. That's entirely.
The relationship's long past. Yeah, something's foundationally screwed up at that point.
Massive red flags. But beyond that, like if your wife is giving you a hard time about, hey, you spent this amount on X, like whatever that shit test is, right? Like treat it as a shit test, right? And like next week we'll up against your standards. We'll talk more about that.
Yeah, next week we'll go into that in detail. And the only real thing I have left to add, earlier on we were talking about the dark triad traits. So if you're not physically attractive, it's funny, irrational confidence. For so many times, if you're just irrationally confident and for no other reason than just the hell with it, you know, just don't care.
Yeah.
It kind of tracks to a little bit of the narcissistic trait of the dark triad, triad. So the dark triad personality traits, narcissism, irrational confidence kind of tracks to that. This is why it's massively attractive in a lot of cases. It sparks intrigue. Like, why is this goofy looking dude that is clearly not in my league pretending, like thinking like he is? And sometimes if you just stick to that frame, suddenly you are in the same league and suddenly you do have your shot, and that will get your foot in the door to kind of just spit your game and, you know, take your shot.
Perception is reality to some degree, right?
It is. Attraction is not a choice. Perception is reality. And I honestly think that's a really good point to leave this off, because next week is going to be a doozy.
Yeah.
Yep. So for those that don't know, so next week we're coming up on the rationalization hamster. We're going to define the sexual marketplace and SMV, and that's going to be we're going to probably end it on a big one with shit tests, and we're going to get into social proof and that women in fact do like sex. And you know where that's going. Yep. So yeah, if you guys, if you haven't liked the video, please hit that like button, subscribe, hit that notification bell, do the basics. If you have requests for future content, once the coursework is done, please
in the post comments.
Drop us a comment. And don't forget, we do have the Discord. It's free. If you want to get into the fraternity, hit myself or James, who unfortunately is not with us tonight, over on TRP Red. We'll get you guys vetted. And that is all about going out in real life, once the world opens back up again, to put the stuff you're learning here into practice out in the real world. So you can find mentors, wings. It's the fraternity. So anyways, yeah, we'll leave it there. Any final thoughts?
Last thought. I think one of the things we'll start doing myself is after the stream itself is jumping on Discord, maybe take some questions, just interacting with some guys and, you know, passing notes. So I think this is what this thing is all about, but I'm glad we left it here. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, we'll see you guys over at Discord here shortly. Thanks again.
Yep.